I do believe in my soul that it's edge computing that's going to enable this explosion of user experience.
Welcome to Future Perfect Tech, a webinar and podcast series by Harbor Research. Each month, we'll be having discussions with the leading experts in smart systems and the Internet of Things on innovations in markets, technologies, and ecosystems that are working together to build a better future.
I do believe in my
In a strange way, I'm optimistic because I'm sure
do
we're going
we
to run
have
into
the
more
models,
big
the
side
frameworks,
of
when will we see mass adoption
enable
of
data
edge
sharing,
technology
and is
in
there a
AI?
Way to monetize that? Welcome to Future Perfect Tech, a series of discussions with leading experts in smart systems and the Internet of Things, where we talk about innovations in technologies, markets, and ecosystems. Today, we're continuing our discussion with Doug Stanley and Glenn Allmendinger about edge technology, where we cover the hurdles to adoption and emerging business models, as well as many more interesting aspects of this exciting area. Doug is a recognized leader in the design of disruptive technologies and applications. He's the founder and CEO of Neolabs, who hold multiple patents in this space, and where he is pioneering edge-to-cloud distributed computing. Prior to Neolabs, Doug was at Deloitte Consulting for 10 years as a principal, fellow, tech evangelist, and strategy leader. Glenn is the founder and president of Harbor Research, a growth strategy consulting and venture development firm that helps industry leaders to discover, design, and develop growth opportunities. So with that, let's rejoin the conversation.
Do we have the models, the frameworks, the technology to enable data sharing? And is there a way to monetize that? And does perhaps the edge offer potential for that?
The thing that I look at the industrial community today, and I said, which industrial company is giving me amperage, temperature, and vibration, proactive system awareness, so that I know my thing is going to fail before it fails? Are there any? Because that is the ultimate edge computing answer, because we know that you can't possibly move that level of bandwidth across a network up into a storage environment, whether it be local or offsite at a data center or cloud environment. You just bust the model. I mean, they say storage is near free, but not at that resolution, amperage, temperature, and vibration on every machine or critical function within an industrial environment. You know, the easiest thing to move to when you talked about edge computing is latency. And latency is certainly a driver, but latency is going to continue to improve. So, right. when today's ecosystem, cloud is supporting, if it's in the hundreds of milliseconds, if that's what your requirement is, generally cloud can support that. But 5 years from now, most likely cloud with hyperscaling is going to support in the tens of milliseconds. But if you are requiring microseconds, today, you can't use cloud, a cloud-dependent architecture. But I think we get a little bit lost in overhyping the network story if we just stop on latency. Without moving towards the need for machines to learn from machines locally, you're not going to do an out and back path on that. And of course, with the data regulatory side, to me, those are far more burning issues that have to be resolved. And frankly, it's edge computing that's going to resolve those.
If you stand back and you kind of get above the trees and look at the whole forest around this topic, I mean, this is another step into this next gen architecture for how information and computation will evolve. And really, if you look at the three legacy development cultures that live around this story, it's classic enterprise IT, it's telco and wireless, if you will, and automation. And all three of those technical development cultures are dragging baggage to the story in terms of the way, it's like living on the south side, not the north side. And in the south side, we do batch computing. We collect data, throw it in a big soup stock pot, and try and predict what will happen tomorrow based on what happened yesterday. And so as the world continues to shift to more real time, to spatial, to deterministic kinds of capabilities. My joke has always been the telco guys get the fact of real-time networks. They built the largest ones on the earth. they just only know two APIs, a cell phone and a smartphone.
Right.
But I suppose 5G will solve world hunger and HIV and everything else in the process. But that's back to that network obsession in that story, not really the way that gets ultimately top-down organized. Control guys are obsessed by control, and they don't see the data value, and the IT guys are still into this kind of like throw it all in the soup stock pot. So it's sort of like this is a moment that requires more of a clean sheet view of how this will evolve in time.
What's holding this space back? What are the impediments to adoption here?
I think more than anything, obviously complex combination of technologies and things across hardware and software boundaries and normal things that tend to inhibit how well things work together. But I think this still gets back to if the three dominant technical development cultures feeding this story are telco, enterprise IT, and automation, all of them have very, very innovative skills within the context of everything they've understood how to address technically in their culture. So if I need to do large-scale corporate computing, IT is great. If I want to do real-time, actually, distribution of large-scale communications, telco is great. If I want to control the world, make it safe, or make it operate in an automated way, you know, the control community and the automation players are all safe. But I think the architecture that defines where this kind of distributed system and processing and edge really fits into in the future is a combination or a hybrid of those three architectural legacies, none of which by themselves will solve this problem. So we're kind of at a point where the way this needs to be done and the way it needs to be organized doesn't really match the mental model of all the existing and larger players and entrenched players. People are spending more than 90% of their annual dollars in huge number of organizations just trying to maintain and keep the old stuff running. And that doesn't put a lot of innovation into this. And so when you say, one, it's complex, many elements to combine in new, unique ways. Two, you know, a lot of vendors, a lot of players are dragging old baggage and old products and trying to make them perform in new ways to do this. And it doesn't really kind of cross that finish line. And I'd say three, the world is really still in the early stages of imagining how to apply all this in a meaningful way and make it work.
Yeah, and I guess from my perspective in the world of startups, there's an incumbent grip on the existing model of moving all data across the network on a paid basis and storing it in a third party environment, whether it be a data center or one of the dominant cloud companies, on a paid basis, and then making it so fucking hard to change from that model that you never will. For those listening, I don't want this to sound like, you know, we're trying to talk you out of edge computing. I think what we're trying to do is be straight with you about what the challenges are. And ultimately what we find is that the end users, the customers, when they understand that they own these processes, you know, they're not slaves to their vendor. When they sit their telco down, or when they sit their mobile provider down, or whatever component of the ecosystem, and they say, look, this is how we're going to architect this solution. If you want to be part of it, these are the rules.
That does bring up an interesting point, and that is that in your interesting position right now, Doug, you have you not only have a technology or a set of technologies, you're also coming from a background of consulting, where, you know, at a strategic level, you were charged with implementing new business models. How does that combined service get packaged up in some way? Because I really see that as becoming as being one of the big impediments as well. It's not enough to just go, you know, implement a couple of couple of thousand boxes. Well, you really need this extra thing that you bring to the party.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to turn it around on Harbor Research as well. But the biggest mistake, now look at it, as a startup founder, the largest shareholder, the largest investor, you know, if I shot myself in the head over every mistake I made, I've been long dead. All right. So, you know, great thing about being a startup founder is like being a cornerback. You got to have a short memory, but you do learn from the biggest mistake is we felt that we could turn our product loose to developers and they would get it. Well, guess what? They didn't, because the developers were not solution architects. So without that guiding hand of teaching people how to optimize a solution architecture, frankly, our uptake has been challenged. So more recently, we're saying, look, we're gonna be there with you. We're gonna take your legacy environment, everything you have, we're gonna use that's usable.
But it's really the users who drive these kinds of capabilities. It's not the machine builders nor the OEMs that really understand ultimately how to do that, or necessarily naturally motivated to do that. And so it's the user that kind of lights the path ahead that begins to force changes on the way these things get combined and recombined and integrated to do that. It's where the new role will emerge and flourish. That kind of role will emerge and flourish is where this kind of service delivery innovation will likely occur. And the leverage of these tools in a much more robust way would be the likeliest place to happen. For the first time in at least 5+ years, I had this epiphany going on in my head about that there probably is a far more interesting and very radically different future service and innovation delivery model that just hasn't really been.
Well, maybe it's along the way of data centers. Maybe it's a managed service model. Frankly, I have not seen a bit of resistance around the entire platform, including the ecosystem, being transactioned as a platform as a service.
Right.
That includes hardware, software, integration, maintenance, solution architecting.
Look how much we've changed and how little distance we've traveled.
Yeah.
Tools we're using have changed completely. And the economics of the tools, the nature of the tools, the way the tools work, and yet so little in the way we conduct business or conduct social systems or institutions has ultimately changed yet.
And so I think it's a combination of, you know, back to edge computing, back to the topic that you asked us to speak about today.
Is that
I think you're maybe to answer your question, I think it ends up looking like a managed service that allow the businesses to focus on their core. And that core, whether it be, you know, a product or a service, you know, they get to stay focused, which their existing culture, you know, certainly has been trained to do. And they're participants in a new service, and they're buyers but also to my platform strategy play. Maybe they're also benefiting from participating in that.
In order for these systems to work, they must be distributed. You can't run these things monolithically. There's no command control center that's possible in the story.
I agree.
Once you distribute things, it starts to match the environment in which it's being distributed into. The environment doesn't have to force itself to use computing. The computing and the network value begin to shape to the environment it's used in.
You know, the challenge is which silicon company is also a software company? Which silicon company can actually become a participant in a platform as a service? We now have a new takeover at Intel.
Peer-to-peer and distributed systems are the antichrist of horizontal core technology.
Correct, because big server silicon, right.
Right. And so whether it's a system on a chip, whether it's more, you know, whatever, distributed silicon elements that are far more programmable and reprogrammable in that regard. I agree with what you said earlier. The biggest problem with the silicon world is none of it understands anything that has to do with any kind of software that gets wrapped around and interwoven with that. They know about the stuff embedded in that. So here again, I mean, if I were searching for a theme across all of this, is everybody has half or a quarter or a third of the business model experience required to realize the new value. That the new values come from creative combinations of elements in both technology and delivery and the business models that earn the returns on the innovation. They all change and they're all missing pieces. Ultimately, this is a design problem. And if I say design, gone through three, you know, we're a toe into the third chapter. The first chapter was classic, you know, product design and product centric design, right? We moved to that sitting on top of the web, and we got into a UX obsession and design thinking and blah, 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 blah. But this third phase, and this is what I've always meant by smart system design, but it's almost like a computational phase of design where it's about all the network interactions and usage values that come of these kinds of complex environments and applications and use cases. And I don't think there's an art school manual out there about how to design
distributed edge computing
platform or the delivery mechanisms that will leverage edge computing in the future. But I do think it's a design problem in the same sense of your earlier mention of solution architect, because that's just a context sensitive or fluent or understanding or facilitating person who's going to look at all these network in network usage context kinds of needs and requirements and anticipate how these things and how these systems will get used.
I think that the OEMs that get that, if all they're doing is peddling their stuff, you're not a solution architect. Right. And I think that takes a ballsy mindset, right, of the long game, right?
Fair.
And all of the public companies that have that quarter-to-quarter pressure, you know, it's difficult not to have that box pressure or that transaction pressure. Platform as a service, I think, just the opposite, because it only really works if you take the long game. You know, if your churn is ridiculous and your new user conversion cost go through the roof, well, then you'll fail miserably. So it's which of these companies will take the long game and reimagine themselves. And I would opine that those are different businesses. It's the quintessential ecosystem play.
Yes.
And many folks are talking the talk, but very few are walking the walk.
Well, I think the whole ecosystem, you know, the interactions from an ecosystem that's actually open, interoperable, and a fluid set of relationships can be enabled is, back to Owen, to your question, what holds this back? I think in many respects, it's that level of complexity, but it's also the degree of cooperation on the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
And this is where I go back to my preschool analogy. We share because we care. You know, it's like trying to explain to any CEO that all businesses to operate in this kind of distributed computing, edge-enabled innovation environment, you know, more than half the data that's going to feed that isn't going to come from your systems and your people and your things. It's going to come from elsewhere, plus your systems and things. And this will be like co-ops. We'll actually be community-based services where there's enough nerds and enough nerd horsepower in the world to actually inform a self-forming community to go figure out how to apply these tools for their own services.
I actually dream about the telco. I don't care if they do it under a different brand, but the telco that understands user behavior in a secure manner, the telco that can tell me my network's going to be down before I can't log in, all the internet appliances that consumer products companies will eventually get uptake on, you know, are completely dependent upon that telco, that internet provider.
Will we ever see them, the telcos, develop their own applications on top of their
God. I think
maybe before I die, but better.
Yeah, or maybe this podcast will compel some. I don't know.
Well, if the winners or the early winners in this space in edge computing are not going to be the utility providers, they're not going to be the big telcos, who are going to be those big winners out of this?
First of all, we have to get past advertising and surveillance capitalism as primary monetization models for value and data.
And I think that's coming. So,
you know, we're kind of like a toehold into these new spaces that won't be driven by advertising and surveillance capitalism. And so, you know, the value of the use cases go up exponentially in that kind of environment. You know, you kind of have to screw an app guy to a telco guy in order to get any ability to understand what context is.
Right? Yeah, who has more leverage than the telco, particularly the telco providing content, whether it's, you know, UVerse or Infinity or Xfinity or whatever it's called. But those that are providing your cable experience, who has more leverage for a platform as a service than they do? But who is showing no ability to make progress in that space? And, you know, in the meantime, you know, we have, you know, tens to hundreds of different one-off subscriptions, right? Which I think obviously that at some point is, and again, maybe COVID will bring a lot of that to its,
I do think
to a natural death.
It's a significant catalyst, but take something like energy. I mean,
same thing.
You know, if I divide all consumer users into two sets of concerns, safety and security on one side and entertainment and, you know, whatever kind of information value on the other side, you know, I mean, distributed energy systems, you know, the ability to more efficiently utilize the energy we do produce is a great classic example of completely context dependent behavior. Everything is. And, you know, back to your question, Owen, I mean, a lot of the enablement's there. You just don't have a way to organize the utilization of these technologies in a meaningful way to set that context. And Doug, I would argue that the cable and telcos are culturally still some distance from having any understanding about what people actually do in the context of their ability to make money with their networks. Whether it's a pandemic or whether it's constrained resources, I do believe those will be huge catalysts for redefining the relationships among many elements, both technical and people and community-wise along that way, because it will force constraints or issues or roadblocks on society and on people in ways that, yeah, I can't grow enough food, or there isn't enough clean water, or there isn't enough clean air. And I think, really back to the question of, does, you know, what would it take to catalyze growth around these kinds of technical capabilities? I think, I hate to say it, but I think in a strange way, I'm optimistic because I'm sure we're going to run into more big societal roadblocks and huge problems that will force us to use these technologies in a much more meaningful way, but will stretch the boundaries of how they get used away from defaulting to the old way, not the new way.
Well, let's then take the other driver, which is climate change.
Yeah.
So this could be regulatory, right? Let's take California. We know for fact, with a study by Berkeley Labs, that every day the grid breaks in California. The number one reason the grid breaks in California is not fires. It breaks because farmers manually turn on their water during the peak usage hour. And they manually turn on the water because that's when they have cheap labor. An incredibly brilliant, easy edge application to automate the on-off and duration of watering, contextualizing that water function that may be mandated. The state of California has no fresh water. They are running out. They change crops from almonds to pistachios because of too much salinity in the water. Yep. So I don't think it's something that's going to happen overnight, but I do think part of this big infrastructure play is we do have to watch for regulatory mandates around applications. You know, we're seeing the leadership, you know, around, you know, electronic vehicles. Obviously, what's driving that? It's not just the, you know, people jonesing for Teslas. It's the regulatory.
Of course.
And the states that are trying to block that, you know, the major auto companies are just saying, you know, we're going to get there without you, right?
Well, if you patch it up one more level, my theory is that Europe is the staging area for the future of multi-government cross-border cooperation. Mm-hmm. And so as much as you can get frustrated by it, you know, led the Brits to Brexit and everything else that's gone on, it is the grand experiment at the things that relate to the things most precious to us, air, food, health, and so on. And so all of our well-being is dependent upon that degree of cooperation. And in many respects, I believe, strongly believe, I'm just echoing what you're saying, that regulation will drive a huge number of behavioral changes, which will be an important catalyst in all of this kind of distributed systems and computing opportunity.
So to come back to Owen's questions, we probably agree that that regulation will cause adoption before telcos getting the big aha that they are actually, or telcos or electric utilities.
Will be the big
platform as a service provider, right?
I think you're making an excellent point, which is this really will be multiple entities contributing to that autonomy that allows that degree of freedom for this value to get realized.
I think I'm right on that.
I think that's
which is good. I mean, I think I've got that.
We should do a different podcast on this in 6 months. I'd love to do it.
Doug and Glenn, thanks so much for your time today. And listeners, we hope you'll tune in next month when we talk to Rick Criss, CEO and founder of Clay2 Networks, about why maintaining a cold chain and logistics has become so important in the age of COVID.